Tom, why do you think Terrence Crawford always uses this as his hype song, as one of the songs that he has played before he makes his walk to the ring? Why do you think that is?
Is that group based out of Omaha? That Hometown Love?
DMX is based out of a kennel somewhere.
That's the best guess I have. I don't know. Do you have a ready answer for why that is agreeable to Terrence Crawford?
Tom, of the two of us here, it's really clear to me and to the listeners that you're the expert on this subject, not me. That's why I came to you with the question. That's why you asked me the boxing questions and I ask you the rap questions.
I am an expert.
Two things that I come to you for: investment banking and rap.
I always have a hot rap take. But yeah, happy to be on. Looking forward to talk some boxing this week for sure. Always enjoy being on.
All right, you're going to need to put that microphone just a little closer to your mouth so you're just a little louder.
How's this?
Sounds good. Or maybe I should turn my sound up.
I'll turn my sound up. Are we going to restart, or is this part of the content the Patreon subscribers look for every week?
No, they look for me talking about boxing to the background with background music of porn music, or what, however I meant to say that. Let's talk about Terrence Crawford versus Jose Benavidez. Listen. Jose Benavidez, and I'm not even saying this as hindsight, because certainly what I'm about to say, hindsight 2020, it is accurate. But even prior to the fight, the bell, the fight being signed, Jose Benavidez had no business being in a position to fight Terrence Crawford. And with that said, he did his best. And his performance is worthy of a mild round of applause. He had success in the fight, specifically because he's tall. I've seen in the past, we have seen that tall fighters tend to land more and have more success on Terrence Crawford than guys who were at least the same size as him, if not shorter. But ultimately, Jose Benavidez came up short, as everyone probably in boxing around Terrence Crawford's weight class would against him. And, you know, Benavidez came in with no wins of note on his resume. He had a hurt leg, and Terrence Crawford treated him as such. He walked through all of his shots. He was landing almost at will in the second half of the fight and punished him for 12 rounds before ultimately stopping him. Is this a fair summarization of what we saw on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to disagree with that. I mean, Jose Benavidez was kind of a stalled prospect. He's a guy who probably should have been considered between 10 and 15 in the division, had a very poor outing against Mauricio Herrera, which was scored in his favor, and then he was shot 2 years ago. So
now, when you say shot, you mean actually shot, not shot in the old Sergio Martinez kind of way, although he's got a bum leg too, but there's levels to having no legs.
Yeah, it works on multiple levels. He was shot as a result of being shot with a bullet through the knee. Like, I mean, I was astounded that he came back to box at all when I heard about that injury. I mean, that seems like the definition of a career-ending injury. I mean, not just a gunshot wound.
He didn't get shot through
the
kneecap.
Not just a GSW. Well, yeah, but he was shot in the knee. I mean, and, you know, heavily impaired his mobility. Again, when the doctors are saying you will never, it'll be a miracle if you can walk again, that's a pretty high bar to be able to box again or box at a high level. So
shout out David Hay, who came back from a career-threatening injury, although he didn't have much of a career after
to
that.
To lose fights with Tony Bellew, yeah. Well, he got some paydays and was humiliated by Bellew and Hearn in some press conferences. But I guess he does some Sky commentating now, and he has his Haymaker promotion, so he's doing okay, although yeah, probably could have done without taking those shots in the head in those two Bellew fights. But yeah, so I mean, regarding Benavidez, to seg into that, you know, he was kind of a stalled prospect. He was viewed as being a prospect, had kind of plateaued. He was viewed as a guy who was just not going to make it to the next level. So top rank keeps a guy like that in the wings to lose to Terrence Crawford. He got a gunshot wound along the way. They decided to go ahead with the plan anyway. And I thought it resulted in a very interesting fight. I mean, there were definitely elements that where he was better than Terrence Crawford. Like, Terrence Crawford was not better in every way. There were lots of moments, maybe 10 or more moments, maybe a baker's dozen of moments in the fight where, you know, they'd be standing in the center of the ring and, you know, Benavidez would successfully counter Crawford's, you know, counterpunch Crawford or counter Crawford's counter. And that had to do with, you know, he does have some talent. He definitely, his height and reach contributed to that. I mean, there were times when Crawford pulled out and, you know, with a shorter fighter with a shorter reach would have been out of range of those return shots. And instead he got clipped by them. So it was a very interesting fight. I mean, at the same time, there were moments where Crawford was able to completely dominate because of Benavidez's restricted movement. So it was very strange seeing a pound for pound fighter. You know, coming into the fight, I said he was my pound for pound number one. Really have some trouble, but, you know, at the same time, really, I mean, pick up steam in the second half of the fight. I did not think he was going to get the stoppage. In the 10th, he tried for the stoppage. And then I thought, okay, you know, he expended so much energy. He's going to take it easy in the 11th. And then in the 12th, he's going to try for it again. But, you know, going into that last minute, I didn't think he was going to get it. Benavidez was countering successfully even in the 12th. But, you know, Crawford had been sitting on that uppercut, keeping it in his back pocket, felt Benavidez was opened and uncorked it at exactly the right time, you know, for maximum dramatic effect in front of his hometown fans. What a jaw-dropping ending. But I don't know, I'm really curious to say, I mean, how should we view Crawford? You know, should we view him differently than we did coming in terms of pound for pound discussions or in terms of the, you know, the rankings at 147? Does this diminish him? Does this elevate him? That's, to me, the most interesting question.
Well, I'm going to say something and then you place what I'm saying. Maybe Terrence Crawford came into this fight and he was okay with getting hit because it would make him more attractive as an opponent who could be beaten for the other welterweights out there. Where am I going with this? Where have you heard this before?
Oh my God, I hope you're fucking with me. Yeah, well, it's the Gennady Golovkin script, of course.
Now, here's the thing. If you think differently of Terrence Crawford, this is what I will say to you. You are very likely making a false equivalency. And Tom, I hope you're not doing this. Because I frequently mention this, that I am out. Like, I have casual boxing friends who will text me after the fights that they do actually watch and give me their very casual opinions. And one of the opinions I got was that Terrence Crawford didn't look that good. That I'm kind of shocked that this guy's the one who people say is the pound for pound best fighter in the world because he got hit. And my response to that is, so what? That didn't stop people from rating Sergey Kovalev number one. It didn't stop people from rating Gennady Golovkin number one. And it certainly didn't stop people from rating Roman Gonzalez number one. A guy with, you know, Lee Wiley convinced a ton of people out there that this guy was some boxing maestro, but really he did things that if you saw it in another fighter, you would criticize that fighter specifically for his footwork. And I'm not taking anything away from Roman Gonzalez. He's a good fighter, okay? But you notice, okay, you notice that Roman Gonzalez, Sergey Kovalev, and Gennady Golovkin, they were pound for pound, and who were they compared to? Who were they compared to? Now,
are you going for me? Oh,
we bring up Terrence Crawford, and we can throw Lomachenko into that category as well. If we bring up Terrence Crawford, though, he is unfairly compared to who? Why are we bringing up the amount that he got hit?
Well, I
why was sure that not a conversation questions. With Golovkin? And it's
should I answer?
You can answer if not, but I think it's clear, it's obvious. You don't even need to say it. Who's on the tip of our tongues? And we'll talk about him later, so we're just not going to bring him up right now. But I think that there's an expectation of how Terrence Crawford is supposed to fight. The reality is Terrence Crawford is not a defensive maestro. That's not his MO, and it never has been. Terrence Crawford has never been that guy. Look at the way he stares at people. Look at how he responded when he was pushed in a press conference. He took a swing. That guy is there to close shows. And if you judge him as a defensive Guillermo Rigondeaux style fighter who's supposed to not get hit, you're misreading the situation. That's not Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford will eat a shot to give one of his own. And so when I watch this fight, I say, this is the same old Terrence Crawford. And the problem that you may have perceived him to have coming into this fight is the same problem he had when he fought Victor Poeltl, which was a failure to figure out distance for 4 or 5 rounds and then a complete domination, which is what we saw in this fight. Crawford, based off of how he fights, just is always going to struggle with tall guys. And we've seen another pound-for-pound fighter in Mikey Garcia have the same problem when they're fighting taller guys. So I don't have a problem with Terrence Crawford in this fight. I think he's at the same spot. I mean, did you drop Lomachenko from where he ranks on your pound-for-pound list because he got dropped by Jorge Linares? This isn't like Terrence Crawford got exposed here. Certainly not. We've seen those kind of fights, and this one was not that. Any response to that, Tom?
Yeah, all of those rhetorical questions were throwing me off.
You don't have to answer them because
with a dramatic pause makes it hard to. Yeah.
Anyway,
that's inside baseball. The podcast listeners don't need to hear about. But anyway, yeah. As far as response, first off, I mean, it was funny you kept posing those questions, and it was like, yes, I did criticize Roman Gonzalez, and he was never towards the top of my pound for pound list, even remotely. I mean, I always saw deficiencies in him, and same thing with Golovkin and Kovalev. You know, at the same time, I think all of those guys, except maybe Gonzalez, I mean, I'm really a hater of Gonzalez as far as the boxing hardcores go, but all those guys deserve to be somewhere in the pound for pound top 10. And I think that gets to the question a little bit of why trying to rank who's number one is sort of idiotic, because most of these fighters will never face each other. So it's just, you know, a wasted discussion. But yeah, as far as this, I said this about Crawford after the Jeff Horn fight, that, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, the conspiracy theory with Golovkin was he allowed himself to get hit in order to get Canelo into the ring, which was always pretty idiotic. But with Crawford, I think I would calibrate that slightly. And this also sort of relates to Golovkin as well, that I would say he chooses to fight in an offensive posture, which opens himself to getting shots. And, you know, I'll just repeat what I said in that shot. It's like, that's what boxing fans want. We don't want a fighter who has a completely defensive posture. We want a fighter who's willing to goad his opponents into throwing shots by taking risks. Benavidez, not a hard puncher. He has a decent KO percentage if you look just at the top line number, but if you actually look at the details.
So does Mike Alvarado.
Well, yeah, I mean, so exactly that point. I mean, he's knocked out some very handpicked opponents. And even when you're talking about him as an installed prospect, there are lots of handpicked opponents that he couldn't knock out. So I think Crawford wasn't too worried about the return fire. He was willing to be offensive and take, you know, in order to land 2 out of every 3 hard shots. I mean, Benavidez definitely had success. I mean, as per talking about your friends, I mean, and also just to answer another element of your question, I mean, part of the reason why I think Crawford is criticized in this way, and there was a lot of criticism online about that. I saw a lot of people criticizing him, and to some extent, he was in a no-win position because of Benavidez's leg and the overall quality of Benavidez. Like we were saying beforehand, he was ranked 31 in BoxRec. So you have number 31 with a gunshot wound to his knee. I mean, you know, you're expecting an early knockout.
Okay, and he didn't get shot last week.
Well, again, but he hasn't really recovered, though. I mean, that's not I mean, his, you know, the mobility problems were in clear display. It's not like people are just making that excuse. It's like,
let me pose this.
Clearly
to you,
see problems. Well, let me just finish the thought very quickly. So, look, Crawford is judged against the template of Floyd Mayweather. I think that's just laziness. People say, you know, who is the former pound-for-pound king. If Crawford's the pound-for-pound king, who should he look like? And Mayweather is just, I mean, Crawford is just a much more offensive fighter. And as fans, we should be happy about that. We should be happy we got a 12th-round knockout in this fight. Just to say, like, something I've been saving up here, you know, I made a bunch of clips of Mayweather fighting Canelo. I'd watched that fight earlier this fall. And Benavidez had much more success. Much more, no, not a... God, what was the name of that judge who got fired after that, who scored it a draw?
Gleb. I mean, CJ Ross.
CJ Ross, yeah. No. Oh, my God. The moment when that's announced is so funny. The entire arena is just like, what? What? But anyway, I mean, look, David Benavidez had so much more success against Crawford than Canelo did against Mayweather. You know, Mayweather is facing this future pound-for-pound star, which is not what Jose Benavidez is, and it was an absolute shutout. I mean, the biggest success Canelo had was some rabbit punches, punches to the back, you know, some elbows. I mean, it was not clean work, and Mayweather absolutely dominated that fight. But, you know, again, Buddy didn't knock him out.
But that speaks to the different goals that they have as fighters.
Right, right. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Crawford was able, you know, took a much more offensive stance, and he did get the stoppage, but he got hit more. Anyway, sorry, back to you.
No, I, you know, it's a good point. You know, they fight like their ideal result is completely different. Crawford's ideal result is that he humiliates somebody, destroys them, and makes sure that they probably never box again. Floyd Mayweather's like 12 rounds, easy work, don't get hit, cash my check, let's do it again. Much different approach. But again, back to, he gets hit. Okay, Errol Spence gets hit. And not only does Errol Spence get hit, he prepares to get hit. Watch Spence versus Brook. Watch Spence versus Peterson. I mean, really watch Spence versus Peterson. You can see Spence braces himself in exchanges to get hit so that he can counter with big shots. Now, this is going, like, right now, despite whatever you thought happened on Saturday night, Terrence Crawford is still the favorite over every single person at 147, with the exception of the obvious, and that would be Errol Spence. And possibly, depending on what book you have and, you know, if he has a good comeback fight, Keith Thurman. But everyone else, it's like, you're not going to sit here and tell me that anyone else has a shot, like a clear shot at being the favorite over Errol Spence. And just bring up a couple more names of fighters who get hit and that are pound for pound. Mikey Garcia, did you watch the fight with Sergey Lipinets? Did you watch how Robert Easter Jr. did manage to hurt him in their fight? Manny Pacquiao, a long reigning fighter of the decade, the guy got hit. No one said anything. No one said he should not be getting hit. He should not be having split decision wins over Juan Manuel Marquez. That's not what a pound-for-pound fighter is supposed to do. Because whether you feel that way or not, Manny Pacquiao still got the job done. Still blew guys out. So, you know, I just don't really like to hear that, oh, Terrence Crawford, either some version of got exposed or isn't as good as I thought he was, or any of that stuff, because it's just nonsense. It's comparing him to some standard that doesn't actually exist. And if you're going to compare him to Floyd, I mean, Floyd's a once in a generation fighter. Okay. Andre Ward was great, but he wasn't as good as Floyd. That's like, it's an unfair comparison. Judge him based off of what there is out there at welterweight. It's clear that Crawford is a level above. He's the crown jewel of the top-ranked stable. And the ratings are going to show that. We don't know what they are officially. The 1.8 metered market rating indicates that the rating, in my estimation, should come in between 1.4 and 1.8 million viewers, which would be really, really impressive. Not the best ESPN number. Obviously, that belongs to the Manny Pacquiao versus Jeff Horn card, and Terrence Crawford is not Manny Pacquiao, but you know, it will be a good number and a nice indication that Crawford's popularity is starting to match his actual in-ring ability, shall we say. Bob
yeah,
Arum,
one more, just
go on.
Oh, go on.
No.
Oh, yeah. I'll just comment on the ratings very quickly since you mentioned that. I mean, I think I'm very interested to see how the ratings will actually end up. Again, yeah, they gave the rating share and not the, you know, I guess we'll get the viewers tomorrow on the Daily Pod or on Wednesday on the Daily Pod, the results from Tuesday. But I'm very interested to see how this will do. I mean, we've now been in the ESPN deal for a while. We've now seen this experiment play out where their fighters have gotten more exposure. Top-ranked fighters have gotten more exposure to more viewers, you know, than what they got on HBO with their roughly 30 million subscribers. ESPN has their roughly 85 million subscribers. They've also gotten more exposure on ESPN shows like First Take. So, you know, I think this is about the point where I think it'll be interesting to see how this is paying off. So far, the indication is Crawford at least did as a, you know, benchmark a much higher rating than he did against Ndongo. That the two shows seems to be a lot higher rated. Again, we'll know more correctly on Tuesday, but very interesting to see. I think that I'm very curious to see this will play off because, again, that was a pretty unspectacular opponent. This is a pretty unspectacular opponent. And I think if you see significantly higher ratings, that's an indication that the top-ranked ESPN experiment is working, which, you know, is pretty important since they have a 7-year deal. I mean, that means if they were able to work this well this far in, that bodes really well for their prospects coming up. So, yeah, very interested in that number on Tuesday. Anyway, go on.
All right, so Bob Arum has stated it is his intention to make a fight with Errol Spence next. But this is Bob Arum talking after all. So how likely do you think it is that Crawford versus Spence is actually going to be next?
Oh, absolutely zero. I think it is interesting. It will be fascinating to see the details of how it plays out. You know, we've seen this before where there are these games of chicken like Mayweather and Pacquiao, most notably, you know, were sort of facing off with each other in the press for 5 years leading up to their fight. This summer, we saw this happen with Wilder and Joshua, where by all accounts, I think everyone would have to say Wilder benefited from that over Joshua, that, it, you know, at least in the U.S., Wilder or Joshua and Herner seem to be swerving Wilder's stock and notoriety went up and this set up this big pay-per-view with Fury. So it'd be very interesting to see. I mean, you know, we had the Spence call out, very, very visible call out of Crawford. I don't know if you'd call it a call out, but he had his press conference where he was talking about Crawford anyway. The night of Garcia Porter.
He cut a promo.
That's a better way of saying it. Yeah. On Saturday night, Terrence Crawford failed to mention Errol Spence's name at all in the ring. He just said, "I want whoever Bob puts in front of me." So it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, you have a lot of fanboys on each side saying, you know, Bob doesn't want any of that work. On the other side, people are saying Spence doesn't want that work. If, you know, if he wanted the fight, they could make it. Arum is being very bullish in the press saying, "I want that fight." But, you know, every indication is that they're lining up the mean machine, Igis Kevalauskas, for Crawford for next year. He's fighting an eliminator fight for the WBO belt in November. And Spence has multiple options. It seems most likely that they are still going to do that Mikey Garcia pay-per-view in the spring as one of the Fox pay-per-views or a Showtime pay-per-view. So I don't see it. And let me just explain why. Again, it's like, if Crawford really did 50% better ratings than the Ndongo fight, which, you know, remains to be seen, that's pretty significant. If he, you know, grew his profile by 50% in about a year, you know, so
I don't like that comparison. I think.
OK, well, anyway, back to you. That's as much as I.
No, I think you're right. But the Ndongo fight is not the indicator I think we're looking for. I think one of the things that's pretty unique to ESPN, and I know this because I have a pretty large database of ratings to pull from that I look at pretty frequently, ESPN's ratings are pretty, I think, volatile is the word I'm looking for, where, like, there's no rhyme or reason
to
them. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're not. Sometimes big fights don't do good ratings, and then sometimes ESPN is super dependent, and I'll tell you why in a second. But ESPN is super dependent on the lead-in. Let me explain. You have a ton of sports bars and places that have TVs, restaurants, that have TVs on playing ESPN. And when something big is on, those TVs are on ESPN. Now, when do they change? They change when they're going to the next event. Now, if something is on ESPN and everyone's watching it and that's doing a big number, and then that ends and a fight starts and maybe there's nothing else on at that time to switch to, those sports bars leave it on the fight. And therefore, we have tons of people that actually will watch fights that aren't that good, most evidenced by the huge number that Arthur Beterbiev versus Enrico Kaling did, which had an Alabama lead-in, which is, you know, that's like the best thing you can do right now in terms of college football. You have Alabama playing as your lead-in. And so I think if we look at Crawford's top rating, and I believe it's like a 1.2, if he does, as you said, 50%, if my math is right, and, you know, could possibly not be, that would be a 1.8 rating. If Crawford were to do that, that would be huge, especially because of the competition that we had on Sunday night. You had college football. You had the game one of the ALCS. That is stiff competition. You had a Bellator card. You had the Dazen card. Was there a Dazen card at that time? No, there wasn't. But you had the Bellator card.
Not direct competition.
Yeah, the Bellator card. There was enough going on Saturday night, in addition to, you know, just having a life that doesn't revolve around sitting in front of your TV. That would be a big number and a good number. I think, you know, it's very clear that Aram's plan in the past, and look, this isn't unique, okay? Don't sit there and think, oh, well, here we go again, slandering Top Rank, slandering Bob Arum. Don't be stupid. This is what everyone does. Golden Boy does it. Eddie Hearn does it. PBC does it. And you see it, and that's why the UFC exists. So you can cut out anyone else who can put their hand out and say, we want a piece of the pie. Keep it in-house. You keep all the money inside. It's why HBO fighters didn't go fight on Showtime, or Showtime didn't do joint things with HBO, because that would split the potential profits. And so there's, yes, you mentioned Aegis Kavalauskas, who would get stopped by Crawford. You have Alexander Basputin, who up until this year, I'm sure did not exist. He came out of nowhere. You have Carlos Adames, who's like, I don't know if he's moving up to 154 or not, and if possibly there's a move to be made where he gets a title and then Crawford moves up to 154 at some point and beats him for an easy title, similar to what we saw with Beltran and Lomachenko. It's possibly that might be happening. I don't think the Spence fight is next, and here's why. There's a couple reasons why the Spence fight isn't next. The one that makes the most sense to me is that it's not ready yet. I know you, like, I want to see them fight. I want to see them now. They're both young enough that we can wait a year or two, and I am confident, and if you're not, then you probably shouldn't want this fight that badly. But if you're not confident that they could go till 2020 still undefeated, this fight isn't as good as you think it is. But those two guys will probably be undefeated in 2020 still. And, you know, if they keep increasing their popularity at the rate that they have been, that fight becomes huge. It becomes a fight where First Take is doing their show outside of the T-Mobile Arena on the day before the fight, like they did with Canelo Golovkin, like they will do with Wilder versus Fury. Unless the Cowboys play like something, then maybe they'll be at Cowboy Stadium or something. But, you know, Dallas Cowboys rule the country. And then the other reason is that PBC is in a holding pattern right now. And the reason for that holding pattern is because of the upfront, because of the Fox and Showtime split that is about to happen, where I am confident that, I think I mentioned this in the Daily podcast last week, that Jermall Charlo, who's going to be fighting on Fox on December 22nd, that was the easy thing to do. That was the easy choice by putting him on Fox. Showtime hasn't invested that much at middleweight. And the investment that they have done in the past is all gone away. Danny Jacobs is gone. He's off on, technically off on HBO, although that will end soon. and then their prospects just didn't quite pan out, and the ones that were left got fed to Jamal Charlo. So there's really nobody that they've built up in that division like the way they've done at 126 or 154 for Charlo to do. So why not give that division over to Fox? Fox can become the home of building up the PBC 160-pound division. But in the meantime, everything's being planned for the upfront. The upfront was a huge success last year, and they're going to do it again. And so the goal, I think, for them right now is plotting the first 6 to 7 months of 2019 and seeing where all the pieces are going to fall. Who's Showtime willing to give Fox? Who's PBC willing to like send over to the Fox brand, and who are they willing to keep on Showtime? I think that's what's happening right now, and we'll talk a little bit more about this a little later in the podcast. But is there anything you would like to add, Tom?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would add is, there's an interesting example to look when talking about this, which was, I think people who are super hardcore Terrence Crawford fans or super hardcore Errol Spence fans, what they're hoping is that this fight happens next and that like Terrence Crawford fights Errol Spence, knocks him out, humiliates the PBC top rank, gets all this huge clout, and then everyone
or the other way around.
Well, exactly. But I'm just playing out the fanboy argument from that side, or flip the other way.
Just wanted to make sure we do both sides. That we're not.
Yeah.
Nobody takes this as you're saying that. But go on.
Well, yeah. For any reputation I have, I think I'm known as a PBC shill. So I was just playing devil's advocate on the other side. So
you are a shill, but go on.
There isn't, and normally that doesn't happen because, these fights are close enough. Neither side can really be that confident that their guy will win. I think something that's interesting is something like this did happen recently with one of these fighters, and that happened when Errol Spence fought Kell Brook. Kell Brook was a draw at the time in the UK. They sold out Brook's home stadium when he fought Spence. That was on Sky pay-per-view. He was seen as being a big draw at that point. Spence knocks him out. Spence comes back, and that really starts the base of his stardom in the US. And Brook, since then has fought on one undercard fight, that really significant, change of fortunes in the outcome of that fight. I think what I would say, if you're a huge Spence fan, you say, oh, he's going to do it again. He's going to fight Crawford, knock him out. They're going to call Aram's bluff, make that fight happen. But, when it comes down to it, why did the fight with Brook happen? Probably because he got his face broken by Golovkin. That was probably part of it. I mean, I know Spence was calling him out before that, but, I think they felt confident they could take Brook. It's hard for me to believe that either side can view this as being much more than a 50-50 fight. I really just think it's that competitive. But, again, that's where if they're really sure they'll win, they force the hand of the other side. I mean, yes, it will be a bigger fight in the future, but if ESPN, if Terrence Crawford could beat Spence in a pay-per-view, yeah, maybe the pay-per-view would only do 300,000 buys now. That wouldn't be that much, but that would say, you don't think Aram would love to have that outcome, to take that away from the PBC and to gain that clout on his side, and then to use that as a base to continue to grow Crawford. I mean, if either side really felt confident they could win, I think they would go for it. Yes, there's an argument to make about the Mayweather-Pacquiao and, building up this historic victory. But I think that does speak to how relatively close this is, that I think both sides are kind of going to play chicken with this and then back off. But you know what? If either side really feels confident, again, like Spence fought Brook, a lot of people picked Brook to win that fight. I mean, that was, viewed as being a close fight. Spence came away with the knockout. So, it could happen. It's not impossible, but, really, that's where you see how much faith these guys have. Because if Arm really thinks he can win, he'll make a deal. He'll do what Wilder did with Joshua this summer and really, really force the issue. But, every indication is that's not going to happen. They're setting up Crawford's next opponent. Spence has many options. I just don't see it happening.
Are you trying to be worse than Max Kellerman at pronouncing people's names correctly?
What? Who did I butcher?
Aram.
What did I say?
Aram.
I've heard it pronounced both ways. Sorry for a lack of consistency, though.
Okay. Shakur Stevenson on the undercard delivered an electrifying performance, stopping Viral Simeon, or Viral Simeon.
thought you were going to say he's a viral sensation, but he's definitely not that. But anyway, continue.
And you, Tom, owe Shakur Stevenson an apology, because the last time he got brought up on this podcast, you were unimpressed with him, said he wasn't that good, said he wasn't going to pan out, a lot of things along those lines. And now you will be forced to eat your words.
Well, this is what I have to say. I thought about it because I knew exactly that was going to come my way. Look, in his last fight, he fought a 16-4-2 fighter, went the distance, did not look spectacular.
Most of the stoppages. A matchroom main event opponent?
Shout out
Francisco Patera.
He fought a guy named Roxburgh two fights ago. So, yeah, anyway, or three fights ago.
Excuse me, how old is Shakur Stevenson?
Again, yes. So let me finish what I'm saying. So, yeah, look, Stevenson, I have always qualified what I've said by he's young, he still has time to develop, and the number one deficiency I always viewed was his power, and that is something which has seemed to increase. You know, people always throw around the term man strength. Seem to increase until fighters are about 26, 27, 28. That's when they seem to sort of reach their physical peak in that way. So, yeah, okay. I always sort of gave that qualification. At the same time, though, I would say here, if you look at the record of the fights that he's had thus far, he fought a guy who hadn't fought in almost 2 years, who's 35. When you haven't fought in 2 years and you're 35, usually that just means you're retired. He also took the fight on very short notice. So, look, Stevenson did what he was supposed to do. He scored the single, highlight reel knockout of his career, which, by the way, I unfortunately, my computer is out of commission. For anyone who's listening who likes my GIFs, I would love to make a Terrence Crawford GIF. I would love to make a Shakur Stevenson GIF. My computer is out of commission. I will do that when I get back and post those before their next fights. But that is not showing favoritism for one, community or another. I just, my computer is not working. But I will be interested to see. I mean, look, if he can end up being as good as he looked in that fight, then that will be great. I just don't think so. But yes, that was quite a highlight reel punch. That finishing punch looked fantastic.
There, to me, is a very, very fine line between taking anything away from a fight and with all that I said, and I dramatized that a little bit, just a little pick on you. I don't rate this win very much, and I take very little away from it. I already thought Shakur Stevenson was good, and I already have the question in the back of my mind of where is his power going to be at when he rises to the occasion of fighting world level opponents. And let's be real here. The floor of Shakur Stevenson's career, if he does not pan out at all, what I think we can guarantee is that he will be good enough to fight for a world title. Absolutely, he will not achieve any less than that in his career. And the question is, when he gets to that level, when the chins get better and the defenses get tighter, will Shakur Stevenson have the offense and the strength to impose his way and win a world title? And so I already knew that. So this fight hardly answered anything, because as you laid out very well, the opponent was basically there to have this result happen. And I saw some tweets, okay? This is like my main thing about this fight is like I saw tweets before the fight about how Simeon is such a good opponent for where Stevenson is at and what Stevenson, what his ability is at this point in his career. And I was like, no, he's not. Viriel Simeon is not a good opponent for the reasons you laid out. And the guy said that this guy is a good opponent because he took Scott Quigg and Lee Selby the distance. And like, I was like, that doesn't indicate whether he's good or not. Selby and Quigg aren't good. Like, he's not that good. Maybe he's a tough guy, but he's not that good. And he was in semi-retirement. He'd been out of the ring for a long time. since he had fought Scott Quigg. And, you know, Stevenson did what you tend to do with those kind of guys. You dispose of them pretty easily. And again, this speaks to the floor of Stevenson. Stevenson was one of the most highly sought prospects, or sorry, not prospects, but amateurs, because of what we saw. He is a good fighter. And the question is, can he be great? Sound like Max Kellerman right at when the bell sounded. but, you know, I think Stevenson has it in him. And if the power we saw in the fight, if that's legit, if that's what we can look forward to, and that's what he could put on his shots, and guys who are tough and have never been stopped before are reacting the way Simeon reacted, then there's a chance that Stevenson could be great. But he's 21 years old. It's very early to say that. And you know what I thought was the funniest thing of all? It's like, I made the claim before that he's 21 years old, right? As a way to, you know, undermine the argument that you were making. I was doing it as a joke. You know that? I was joking. Because a great fighter at 21 years old would have a world title already. Do you know who had a world title at 21?
I believe you're going for Floyd here.
I'm not mentioning no names, but you should look up that little relevant bit of information while we move on. Unless you would like to apologize some more.
No, I have an apology coming up if we touch on the World Boxing Super Series card. I don't have much to apologize for.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk. Yeah. Okay. Zolani Tete.
One second. A bit more on Stevenson very quickly.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think regarding winning a world title, I think I definitely see him winning a world title very possibly. But that has more to do with Top Rank's shenanigans than it does his ability. I mean, I think just something very interesting that's kind of developed over the last few months, which, you know, we've talked about, but I think it's interesting here. Bob Arum, strong association with the WBO. He's, you know, known for getting his fighters, speaking of like Zerto and Oscar Valdez, vacant title shots against, at least in the Oscar Valdez example, you know, vacant title shots against completely unheralded opposition. And look, could we see Oscar Valdez move up to 130, win the WBO belt against a terrible opponent at some point, and then at some point Stevenson come in to fill that void? Yeah, definitely. And then another piece of that is Frank Warren, another promoter heavily associated with the WBO, is now aligned with Top Rank. They made a deal which was great for Frank Warren. He had been affiliated with the PBC for a while. Top Rank has agreed to broadcast all of his UK shows, the quality of which is, you know, pretty dismal for the most part, the average quality of those cards. But he's agreed to broadcast all of them on ESPN+. And as a result of that, you know, he's brought some nice fighters in the sphere of his influence. So, you know, we could definitely see now Lee Selby, Warrington, Frampton in with Oscar Valdez or Shakur Stevenson at some point in the next few years. So some combination of that suddenly became pretty interesting. You know, I had expected those guys would mix it up with the PBC guys. Now it looks like they're on the Top Rank side. Went from Top Rank had Oscar Valdez, whose ability has looked like, you know, sort of his potential has seemed to diminish with each of his fights, having these life and death performances against not super great opponents. Well, now they have a little bit of a deeper pool of opponents. Became a little bit more interesting on the Top Rank side and the Matchroom side the Frank Warren side at 126. So very interesting to see. Much more interested now in how those fights will play out, whereas before I sort of thought Oscar Valdez against who, Shakur Stevenson against who, Michael Conlon against who, you know. We've got a nice little ecosystem now.
I'm going to move on.
Go on.
I don't want to run through.
Regarding me mentioned Conlon.
I don't want to run through the guys that Shakur Stevenson would beat. It wouldn't be fair. Zolani Tete headlined the World Boxing Super Series card this weekend, and Zolani Tete did one thing very, very well this weekend. He proved to me what I said last week and what I've said about him in the past is 100% correct. Tete is a fighter that is capable of delivering brilliant explosive, violent knockouts. But in the event that he cannot knock a guy out, Zolani Tete stinks out the joint. He's a boring fighter, has no creativity, does one or two things, figures out that they works, and then basically allows himself to be held or holds on his own for the rest of the fight and squeaks by with decisions that at the end of the fight, nobody really remembers what happened. And that's what happened on Saturday. It was a pretty poor fight. I thought Aloyan was better than anticipated. That I'll give him. And I think the my main takeaway is that Aloyan belonged in that fight. Like I criticized the selection of Aloyan as part to be part of the tournament, and I figured that there were alternative or ulterior motives for having him in the tournament. But the way he fought, I think, like, obviously he lost, okay? But he didn't get outclassed. He didn't get knocked out in the first round. He was a fighter that, you know, tried his best, didn't work, but you know what? He's not bad. Like, I think Aloyan could be a pretty good 115-pound fighter. I just don't think he has a size to compete with. I mean, he got a raw deal, given that Tete's a big bantamweight. But Aloyan wasn't horrible. That was my takeaway. But otherwise, a forgettable fight. Tete looks poor. If he doesn't knock out, I believe he fights the winner of Burnett Donaire. If he doesn't knock them out, I think Burnett and Donaire could both beat Tete.
God, if he loses to Nonito Donaire, that is... Yeah, I think you coming into the fight called Tete overrated, and I sort of laughed at that because I really don't think that people really care about him that much.
Well, he fights at 118 pounds, duh.
Yeah, so I think he showed that he is limited. At the same time, I mean, Aloyan was sort of an interesting curiosity, very decorated amateur who had a silver medal stripped at the 2016 Olympics for testing positive for a PED. So it was interesting. There were some European fighters who were saying, you know, he has a real chance in this fight. He's a lot better than people think. I mean, you know, again, he wasn't just a 4-0 fighter coming in to lay down. You know, he had a solid potential, and he was going the Lomachenko route. You know, not as decorated as Lomachenko, but another thing, very solid amateur career, and just thought, you know, it's now or never. And it would be interesting. You know, he's already 30, so another reason why I think he took this shot and viewed the World Boxing Super Series as a real opportunity for himself. And, you know, almost could have pulled it out. You know, it was like he really won stretches of the fight. So, yeah, I don't have a lot more to say. I mean, he may or may not have more of a career. I mean, the thing is just he's so old. This kind of was his chance. Again, Tete is not really good. He's not going to win the tournament. But, you know, he's another guy. He's another guy. I mean... It sort of speaks to in these tournaments, even if you just pay attention to the main guy, like say last year with Usyk or this year with Inoue, you know, fine, just pay attention to the Inoue fights. And if you're super interested, then these are sort of the eliminator bouts for his future opponents. You know, it's not great. That's kind of the best sales pitch on this. Anyway, ready to talk about the rest of the card?
Well, only one other fight. That's the Andrew Tabidi fight. Andrew Tabidi escaped a pretty close call. And I say that because while I thought Tabidi won the fight, and it was pretty obvious to me that he won the fight, he's in Russia. They took a really long time adding up the score totals.
Yes, very strange, especially considering the cards weren't that close.
Yeah, they were over... You know what I think happened is that... So they took a long time, so long if you didn't watch it, that they actually had the camera on these guys, like just trying to like do the adding or whatever of the cards. And what I think was that two things happened. They were trying to white out Fayfair's name and write Tabidi over it because they realized that a couple of the judges turned in. It's like, dude, Fayfair didn't win this fight. Like, erase that. Or they really struggled with basic math.
I think the most likely thing, there was a point deduction late in the fight. Sorry if I stepped on a joke.
No, but, go for it.
I think probably that's my guess, is it had to do with the point deduction. They just wanted to make sure the point deduction was applied appropriately.
Imagine that, actually trying to be thorough.
That's my guess. But yeah, it was a strangely long amount of time. You know, it sort of speaks to just not a lot of, not, I mean, it's like Russia, all of Russia has less fights than like Nevada or California. You know, it's not a super big pro boxing hotbed, especially not at the world class level. So, you know,
and I will
there
say
could definitely
this.
Be some inexperience on the hand of their professionals, but you know, the right guy won. Anyway, go on.
Well, I was just going to say the other thing about Russia is that they have a reputation for a lot of things. Okay. A lot of things, but you know, what's not one of them? Bad scorecards. You don't get robbed in Russia. We've frequently seen guys go over there, and not only do they not get robbed, they beat Russians in Russia on the cards. It's like almost like Russia doesn't like their own fighters. Seriously. Or maybe they just want more fighters to keep coming over there so that they can launder their money or something. But Tabidi got the card. I didn't think Tabidi was horrible, but he just wasn't very decisive in what he did. He didn't throw a ton of combinations. He couldn't knock out Fayfair, which I believe was what he wanted to do. The main takeaway from this fight, apart from the struggles with math at the end, was the referee was terrible. Fayfair held and threw shoulders for every single round, basically. And it wasn't until the 12th that the referee got wise and was like, oh yeah, I can take a point. Maybe that'll stop it. And it didn't, but like, you know, if you do it with like 2 minutes left in the entire fight, it's a moot point, essentially. A point should have been taken way early in the fight. Not just to penalize him, but seriously, to make it a more watchable fight, because it was a dreadful fight in terms of enjoyment or like the actual entertainment value of the fight.
Yeah, so... For my take, I mean, look, the reason why I said I had to apologize was I posted some Tabidi GIFs. I've been a Tabidi fan for a long time. I've been a fan since I saw him fight on Showbox. He had a prospect versus prospect showdown a few years ago.
And he was terrible in that fight. Shame on you.
Well, I was going to say, so it was against Keith Tapia, who fights Mike Perez on the World Boxing Series Super Series card next weekend. Not part of the tournament, but it's like...
just an undercard fight.
A possible... Well, it's like a stand-in.
Oh,
like
the
World Boxing
okay.
Super Series does that in case someone gets injured. So, Keith Tapia, another like very awkward fighter, and I think it's something. So, to answer that, you know, I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent, but I'll make it pay off. So, one of the things that people like about Tabidi that I like about Tabidi, and something that's funny, just adds a bit of color. He trains with Floyd Mayweather Sr. and they do fantastic pad work. That's one of the things that he's had a bunch of these viral videos. I posted a clip on Reddit that I think did about 200,000 views this week. So, I mean, you know, people love that. It has like crossover appeal. Like somebody who doesn't watch boxing and see that and see an old man working the mitts with, you know, a young hungry lion and just enjoy that. You know, it's just, it's entertaining. But anyway, so Tabidi fights out of the Mayweather gym. And I think something with Floyd Mayweather when he fought, like thinking back when he fought Ricky Hatton, I'm old enough to remember when that fight happened live. A lot of the talk coming in, people said Hatton's going to be too big. He's going to bully Mayweather. People thought, oh, you know, Hatton, strong guy. He's going to bully Mayweather. That's his style. He's going to make it ugly for Mayweather and he could have some success that way. Instead, Mayweather bullied Hatton. He was the stronger man. There was nothing Hatton could do in that fight. He beat him by every dimension. So something we saw in this fight, Aloyan was extremely ugly, extremely, you know, fouled continually. Fayfair was extremely ugly fouling the whole fight. Just every time there'd be an exchange, he'd drive Tabidi back to the ropes. And the ref didn't penalize it. As you said, he did it in the 12th round. You got to do that in the sixth round. You do that in the sixth round, then maybe it'll stop in the second half of the fight. You do it in the 12th round. Well, you had 12 rounds of that shit, you know, before it happened. But, you know, Tabidi was not really able to deal with that. And part of that, I wrote a preview for this fight for the website. It was part of a Gleb's article, but I wrote the Tabidi preview. Fayfair has weighed in as heavy as 230. He won the Russian heavyweight title, which is even less prestigious than a British title or a Commonwealth title. But he won a Russian heavyweight title fight. He's just much bigger. Tabidi always weighs in at about 190, 195. For this fight, he weighed in at 199. But generally speaking, he weighs in comfortably lower than the cruiserweight limit. He's a guy who really doesn't make weight for cruiserweight. He's just too big for light heavyweight. He's you know, you see him, you think he looks big, he looks muscular, but he's really undersized for cruiserweight. He's a guy who really suffers from the 25-pound gap between the 175-pound limit for light heavyweight and the 200-pound limit for cruiserweight. So, you know, what happens in this situation? Fafer is trying to bully him, and he really didn't, you know, it's like the only thing he could really do is just walk backwards, you know, because if you try to bully a guy like that, you're just going to tire yourself out. So Fafer was just leaning on him and trying to push him. And really all he could do was just, okay, I'm just going to back up to the ropes. Otherwise, he would sap his energy. And he really didn't have a plan B for that, which, you know, speaks to one, I guess, to some extent. I mean, you know, there tactically wasn't a whole lot more he could do, but also just, you know, he doesn't have the size and strength to be a physical presence at that weight class. He has a lot of talent. He has a lot of speed. But, you know, if someone wants to make the fight ugly, and, you know, there's another guy in the tournament, Bredis, who was able to do that with Usyk. So, you know, well, actually not really in the Usyk fight, but he's known for fighting with that kind of style. I think Bredis will be a very bad style matchup if he ends up fighting Tabidi. So I like Tabidi. I mean, it also, just another thing, is he only had 16 fights coming in. He's a bit older, but it did look like a prospect in his 16th fight, you know, where he fought a guy with kind of an annoying style. He learned from it, but, you know, he didn't look like a seasoned world champion. And unfortunately, you know, he's in the tournament with some very good guys, and I think it might be too much for him. I'm still going to be rooting for him, but, you know, I had very high hopes for him for a while that he could really break through and be a consequential fighter in the sport. And I think what we're seeing is he's, you know, pretty good, but I don't think he's going to be that type of breakthrough fighter. And it's hard to predict that he'll, from this point on, you know, I had high hopes that he'd be able to win the tournament. I think after this performance, seeing what he looks in with, you know, looked like with that big Russian, he was good enough to win. Again, on legitimate scorecards, I don't think the win was in doubt, but, you know, aside from the factor of being in Russia, but yeah, I think going forward, I think his prospects to win the tournament are diminished. Yeah, I know you just made a whole drag about how their scorecards aren't actually bad, but you know, you always wonder about that. I mean, I think also Richard Comey did have something to say in his fight against Denis Shafikov. You know, it was a close fight, you know, but he didn't get the decision, you know, but that's a whole other thing.
I got some breaking news. You're going to love this one. Let's get your fresh reaction. Dmitry Bivol's next fight has been announced.
I can't wait.
He will be facing, on November 24th, in Atlantic City, on HBO, against John Pascal.
Whoa, where did that come from?
So, like, it's three things that are basically being resurrected from the dead. Atlantic City, HBO, and John Pascal? Honestly, this would be lit if it was like 2011, but like, this is in 2011. Dmitry Bivol, one of the top five pound for pound fighters under the age of 30 years old. The best fighter in the world at 175 from Kyrgyzstan. Any other qualifiers I can put here? Technically Russian. No, I really like Bivol. Bivol's one of the guys that I think is really, really good.
Well, not a prospect, I guess, right? I mean, he's past he's
27.
Star. Yeah.
But yeah, John Pascal? That's not even in Canada. Is Atlantic City like an hour from Canada? Aren't you from this part of the world? Don't you know?
Yeah, no, it's not a reasonable drive at all. Yeah, there's not going to be any crossover there. Wow. You know, I don't understand why Jean Pascal, I mean, you know, just to jump in, like, when he fought Sergey Kovalev, I thought, why on earth are they doing a second Sergey Kovalev fight? Like, he clearly lost the first fight. It makes no sense. Why would HBO even try to have that fight? And, you know, they have been building up Jean Pascal Adonis Stevenson fight forever. Instead, he fights Kovalev twice, kind of gets devalued completely, goes on to lose to a lighter Alvarez in what was not a close fight, but what was scored a majority decision. Then, you know, got a win against Ahmed El Bialy in his last fight, and then seemingly retired, but, you know, it was sort of like a contract retirement. It seemed like he retired in order to get out of his existing contract. Got one comeback win, but I just, like, how could this make sense financially? I don't, you know, like, how much more sense would it have been for him to fight Adonis Stevenson in Canada? But, you know, who knows? I guess maybe that fight never came his way and he had to go this way. I just, like, that is so strange. I mean, it's also, you know, again, it's like, I don't know. what's your take? Yeah, that one really caught me by surprise.
I don't have a take. It's a trash fight. I'm not talking about it anymore. We're moving on.
I will watch Bibble knock Pascal out, which is my prediction. And I think it will mean Pascal has just enough left that it will still mean something. Not that much, but something.
All right. Khabib has challenged Floyd. And Floyd said, yes, I'll fight. And obviously, think about this, okay? It makes 100% sense if Khabib really wants to get in the boxing ring and fight Floyd, and we're going to do the whole Mayweather-McGregor thing over again, Floyd would be stupid to say no. Like, cash $200 million check to have a sparring session and ultimately stop an MMA fighter? Why not do this? I mean, do you think that there's any reason why he should not do this?
Yeah, well, it's not a serious call out. I mean, it was funny seeing this play out in slow motion because shout out to Gleb. Gleb was at the fight in Katerinburg. I don't think I pronounced that correctly, but he was at the World Boxing Super Series fight. He got to meet Khabib, or at least go to an event where Khabib was. He was given some sort of VIP ticket as part of, you know, and Leonard Ellerby was there with Andrew Tabidi. So, you know, sort of as I viewed this, Leonard Ellerby kind of just like corralled Khabib and got him to talk into the phone. Something a lot of people have talked about is Khabib's Instagram follower numbers have like skyrocketed since the McGregor fight. So, I think it's just a bit of social media fun. I think Khabib is a serious enough minded person that we're not going to see him face Mayweather, but it's fun to talk about it. Yeah, free money, you know, easy work, as Mayweather would say. So,
I mean, you could fight Manny Pacquiao, who's a real fighter.
Khabib talking into the camera. Yeah, that would be a huge event if it happened. Free money for Mayweather, but I don't see it happening.
The only thing that, so like, look, when the McGregor stuff came around, we all like just kind of brushed it off. Silly us. In hindsight, it makes sense. Like, oh, Floyd's like, oh, McGregor wants to fight me. We'll make it work. Whatever we have to do, we'll make it work. As long as I get the same split that I normally get, I'll fight. Well, if who's the most popular actor right now? Like, Floyd will fight Michael B. Jordan. Okay, if he was serious, he was like, oh, Creed wants to fight me. All right. All right, we could do this. Floyd will fight LeBron, okay? But because it makes sense.
Oh my God, I would totally buy that pay per view.
You gonna buy the Tiger versus Phil?
No, but I would watch LeBron in the ring with Mayweather. Yes, that would be a free show I would pay for.
So anyway, so we didn't believe it. We didn't take it serious. But hindsight tells us that we probably should have, because you know the whole risk reward, zero risk there. And the reward was a 200 and something million dollar paycheck. Like, oh, yeah, any of us would take that. And if Khabib is serious, okay, if Khabib is serious, I have no doubt in my mind that Floyd's like, hey, I'm still in shape. But the other thing is like the actual concern, if we're going to bring up the logistical serious concerns here, is Khabib standing with the UFC. I don't know if he's still going to be involved in the UFC. You know, it really depends on how the punishments play out, and I don't know the full story, but I know enough to know that his standing in being a UFC fighter is up to interpretation right now, because he's kind of upset with them with the possibility that they'll punish his friend who was involved in the little melee after the fight. That's all I got to say about that. I mean, what else could we really say?
Yeah, don't know just anything. Very quickly, I am not going to talk a lot about something I'm not qualified to talk about, but just from the outside,
that doesn't usually stop you, Tom.
Yeah, but, true, touche, yeah. Regarding the situation with Khabib, is fascinating. Because unlike, you know, McGregor had his ins and outs with UFC, but ultimately he ended up coming back to them. You know, he could have done some type of independent promotion, made a lot of money, but I think ultimately he felt like the best deal was with the UFC, and they might have still had some type of contract with him, you know, so that he really couldn't get out of, that if he tried to fight in Europe or the US, he'd get sued. Couldn't really do that. Situation with Khabib is different. Russia is a semi-lawless country, and he's backed by Russian billionaires. He is very arguably, you know, again, very much on the outside. I don't know that much about this, you know, but from what I understand, arguably number one pound for pound in the UFC, gained, you know, a huge amount of notoriety for his win over McGregor. He is someone who could go to Russia and fight, backed by Russian oligarchs, and, you know, again, just say fuck off if the UFC tries to sue him since he's still under contract. you know, he had a meet and greet with Vladimir Putin, who urged Khabib's dad to not smash him too aggressively because he did a good job beating up McGregor. So that would be
weird.
Just an unbelievable train wreck if that happened, if he ended up telling the UFC to fuck off and partnering with the UFC promotion in an MMA promotion in Russia. So anyway, that's the end of that. But yeah, really don't know anything about this. But just from the outside, that would be fascinating if that actually happened.
I'm trying to look at an MMA pound for pound list to see who the top guys are. I just Googled it and Conor McGregor's name popped up number one. So I don't quite think that's accurate.
I'm reminded of the Facebook Live with Ryan Garcia in his last fight, where they went to the like audience scoring and they had him sweeping the entire fight.
he was clearly losing.
He had like 99% of the votes for, well, he didn't necessarily lose the fight, but he lost a bunch of the rounds, and he was like voted as having won like 99% of the vote, had him winning every single round.
Okay, so, so I can tell you right now that.
So maybe there's some Conor McGregor fans out there voting for his pound for pound status.
ESPN's pound for pound list is is just as bad as their boxing one, because McGregor's number 10, Khabib is number 2, but Tyron Woodley's only number 4. That's false, because I am like a beast with him on UFC 2 Online. He's got to be better than number 4. Manny Pacquiao is signing with PBC. And I laid this out on the Daily Podcast. I'll briefly lay it out again. And the thing that most intrigues me about this, more than the fights, more than what Manny Pacquiao is going to make, more than whether if Floyd Mayweather is going to come back or not, what intrigues me about this is how Pacquiao's legacy will change. It's no secret that a lot of boxing fans, specifically the ones with loud voices in social media, which, you know, Reddit, Twitter, they are anti-PBC. Now, the actual boxing number suggests that their voice isn't that loud because PBC still does good business. But I wonder if Manny Pacquiao's legacy will start to shift because he's aligned himself with Al Haymon, who many people criticize on Twitter and on Reddit. And it's something that I think it would be a damn shame. And if you're one of those people who does this, shame on you, because Manny Pacquiao's had one of the best careers that you'll ever see in a lifetime. And chances are, if you're listening to this, you were able to see Manny Pacquiao's rise, his ascent through multiple weight classes, and the destruction of the quote unquote Mexican legends of his era. And so I, as somebody who watched that, like, would hate to hear people, and I know we clown on Pacquiao, and there's a difference between clowning on him and legitimately saying, oh, well, Manny Pacquiao wasn't that great, all because he aligned himself at the end of his career with a guy who's going to possibly sort out the tax issues that he has here in America. That's one of the things that I really am interested to see if the narrative shifts at all on Manny Pacquiao's legacy. Anything you want to say about that, or should I move on to the next question about Manny Pacquiao?
Quickly, you're definitely correct. I mean, I would just say, look, the PBC has its share of annoying fanboys online as well. But yes, there's a certain segment of fans who's going to be annoyed at Pacquiao and disown him. I'll believe it when I see him out on the stage. I mean, I just still think Pacquiao's presence in boxing is so chaotic at this point. I'll believe it when he actually comes out on the stage or we get an actual fight announcement press conference. But yeah, it does seem to be going in that way. Look, I will definitely buy Pacquiao versus Broner, no question. That will be a hilarious promotion. And I think actually pretty interesting to see who'd win the fight. So, you know, generally speaking, I'm not that interested in these sort of legacy showdowns when they're holding things up, but no one is holding onto the notion that Pacquiao is really ranked highly at 147. You know, they talk about Crawford and Spence. Pacquiao is just kind of removed from that. So if he's on his retirement tour, fights Broner, I'm all for it. Anyway, let's hear the question.
Well, first of all, don't ever question me on moves about Al Haymon. I've told you multiple times that I've never been wrong here.
For all we know, you are Al Haymon. A theory that many people have thrown out there. But anyway, continue.
Okay. Wow, just going to expose the business like that, huh? Okay. I'm a little shocked that you would go that far. Listen, Steve Kim, although backpedaling in recent memory, had Manny Pacquiao, along with Golovkin and Canelo, as the beacons of hope in their crusade against Al Haymon and PBC. It would be interesting also to see how they, if they do, choose to run that back. Anyway, my question, which is far more interesting than that, is there are two questions that I have for you. And listener at home, this is kind of like a game. You can do it as well. Question number one. Assuming that the deal for Manny Pacquiao to go to PBC is a three-fight deal, you get to play matchmaker. What three fights could you pick, and you're listing them in order, which three fights would you pick for Manny Pacquiao to maximize his earnings over on the PBC brand? And of course, you can only choose from the PBC side of things.
Well, the very easy answer is fight Mayweather three times.
You cannot use Mayweather, though. That's the caveat, because obviously it's like the Dylon answer.
I don't know what that means. Can you explain?
No one is shocked. No one is shocked. Just move on.
Okay. I will roll my shoulder on that one. Okay. Anyway. So, I think it's been widely discussed. One, the notion of a three fight deal, and two, this possibility that, you know, he'll fight Broner next and that they are dangling a Floyd fight in front of him. So I think it's hard to discuss without having Floyd involved, because I don't think he would have made this move without the possibility of fighting Floyd. But I think you definitely see him fight Broner. That to me just seems like such, you know, a money fight to make. I think you would also see him fight Danny Garcia, another money fight to make, although I think one which is a little bit too risky for Pacquiao. I don't know if I could see him doing that based on the threat level. And then a third fight, if you don't include Mayweather, at the end of this road, I think he just fights whoever is the biggest at PBC at that point, whether that's Errol Spence, whether that's Keith Thurman. I could see that happening if they throw up enough guaranteed money. I think that actually is a possibility, especially if Errol Spence and Keith, you know, they sort of presuppose that Spence has fought some combination of Porter, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman. If he's won all of those fights, I think at that point he's a big enough star that it would make sense for Pacquiao to do it. But I will just say again, since we've eliminated Mayweather, it's hard for me to imagine any version of his deal that doesn't include a Mayweather fight, because otherwise I think he really just has kind of gotten hoodwinked here, because that's, you know, that is the nine-figure payday that makes him signing with the PBC make sense, because he definitely had options elsewhere. You know, could have fought Amir Khan. Matchroom definitely could have done something interesting with him. So
he can still do that.
How about you?
He can still do that.
Well,
Amir Khan's on fight number two of his three-fight matchroom deal.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, that is a point I did want to get to, that, you know, this gives them enough power that you could definitely see Amir Khan come back over to the other side. I could definitely see him, you know, never fighting Brook and then just fighting Pacquiao down the road, you know, outside of the Hearn banner. So anyway, where were you going?
So I am not as cruel as you. My three-fight deal to maximize Manny Pacquiao's earnings do not include sacrificing him to anyone. My three fights. One, the first fight. We need to make a big splash. We need a talker. We need history. We need a feud, a long-lasting feud to at last be settled. Fight number one, Manny Pacquiao versus Pauly Malignaggi.
Oh, wow, that's a clever pick.
Pacquiao beats Malignaggi. Fight number two, we need a long-lasting feud, a fighter capable of carrying the promotion on his back, a fighter who could match Manny Pacquiao's babyface persona with heelish, just heelish tendencies. Here's where Adrian Broner comes in. Fight number two, Manny Pacquiao versus Adrian Broner. The last fight on our deal. We need yet another heel. We need yet another person who's going to talk about Manny Pacquiao and accuse him of actually losing his last two fights. We need someone that's going to say, you're only over here because you don't want to fight Terrence Crawford. Someone to make him mad. We need the return of Freddie Roach. Why? Because we need a trainer versus trainer battle. The last fight on the deal, Danny Garcia. You picked two of those, but I framed them better.
Oh, definitely. I am so impressed with the Malignaggi pick. Like the boldness of that. But yes, that is exactly what Manny Pacquiao needs. That's fantastic. Actually, that has me so excited. I'm actually checking Malignaggi's Twitter right now to see if he's, you know, Malignaggi has been calling Pacquiao as a drug cheat for years, which I just always thought was Malignaggi's idea of keeping it real. But if that is actually his way of trying to build up this fight all these years, then, well, that is a genius, some genius long con planning by Pauly Malignaggi. Yeah, that would be sensational. I have to say, though, he has not looked anywhere remotely near fight weight, so I don't think that dream can come true. But yeah, that would
I just
be
looked at Paulie's Twitter. He's talking about Conor McGregor and liberal cucks. So a normal Monday for him.
Well, I don't have anything more to say about this. But
now, what three fights would you give Manny Pacquiao if you wanted to enhance his legacy, meaning he has to go out on three wins? What would those fights be?
Boy, I think his legacy is already secure. I really just, I don't have a different, you know, list of, I think, let me frame this in a slightly different way, and then I'm just going to just hit the eject button from the question, because I don't have any more to say about opponents. Look, something we talked about with Top Rank versus the PBC and the possibility of him signing with the PBC is just, you know, the chance for him to end his career with dignity. That all Bob Arum wanted to talk about was Pacquiao's tax problems and that he needs to fight Terrence Crawford and get knocked out like a good boy. You know, I think clearly part of this is the possibility of a nine-figure fight with Floyd Mayweather. As much as people, you know, anyone out there who wants to complain about that, that will be a fun promotion and they'll find an angle to make it work, you know, when that happens. But, you know, outside of that, again, it's a chance for Pacquiao to end his career with dignity. I think a Broner fight, he could lose that, but he's not going to get blown out. You know, it's not like a Terrence Crawford fight. And then there are other guys, again, you know, he could fight Lamont Peterson, say, again, a fight. Well, that one he's not going to lose, I think, with this current 2018 version of Lamont Peterson. But the PBC has enough guys in its stable that you could at least do pay-per-views. And, you know, I think probably what the PBC will do, you know, presumably when this happens, this is looking like a real thing, say he fights Broner, is stack the undercard. So, you know, even if people want to sneer at the main event, you get enough solid, like, Showtime main event level fights, you know, make it like a real solid triple header, quadruple header, that, you know, you get the mass appeal of having Pacquiao's name, you get enough appeal to make it a pay-per-view, but then you put enough solid fights underneath it that it's a real event, so boxing fans really can't complain about it. I think that's probably the road ahead. And a big part of that, again, is allowing Pacquiao to end his career thing. And you can fight a guy like Adrian Granados. You know, he doesn't need to fight killers. When I mentioned Errol Spence or Keith Thurman, again, I was talking about it in terms of being a last fight. If people are sick of him fighting, you know, a made-to-order opponent, say he gets two wins and a knockout out of those two fights, I think that becomes a pretty big promotion. I could definitely see him do that, you know, if Mayweather is not available.
I think that there are actually four opponents that we could choose from. Broner has to be in the conversation. Who, if I were to pick three fights that he could win, I'd pick Andre Berto, Paulie Malignaggi / Victor Ortiz, assuming Victor Ortiz isn't in prison, and Adrian Broner. Three wins that I think he could pull off. I don't favor him against Broner, but I wouldn't be shocked.
Oh, my God. Victor Ortiz. The washed welterweight series that we've seen looming in the background. What we didn't know was that was just an eliminator tournament to fight Pacquiao. And that's fantastic.
Again, I formulated this plan like 4 or 5 years ago. Okay. I wrote about it. Almost, I felt like every week, and it's coming true. It seriously is. And I'm so happy that Manny Pacquiao is the latest addition. The World Boxing Super Series actually stole my idea. Like this, I came up with this before the World Boxing Super Series. So they stole my idea. I want, what do you call it? Residuals? What is a,
yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Or royalties, residuals, royalties, both of them work.
Okay, cool. We would talk about Eddie Hearn's Monaco card, except I can't remember anyone's name who's actually fighting on it.
Lewis Ritson lost.
He did lose. But he showed the heart of a warrior, didn't he?
I didn't watch it, so I have no idea.
You didn't miss much. Archer Beterbiev is going to fight Joe Smith Jr. on the Canelo, Rocky Fielding undercard, or the week after on DAZN. It really depends on where Canelo's broadcast. If it's not broadcast on DAZN, then it'll be on its own card. And if it is broadcast on DAZN, it'll be on the undercard. Cool. Whatever. Anthony Yard fights this weekend against Walter Esquera. That'll be on BT Sport. Anthony Yard is a light heavyweight prospect out of the Frank Warren stable who's got himself into mandatory position, I believe, twice now. And each time they've said, No, we're okay. We don't really want a title shot yet. We're not ready. And you know what? You could kill him all you want, but that's smart because he's not ready. And if you think you have a talent on your hands, you don't rush him. You could, but that's how we get Luke Campbell situations. So I think Frank Warren's doing a good job by holding Anthony Yard off for now, and at some point when he's ready, they'll toss him into a world title fight. You know, or when the WBO belt's available. That's a good joke. I don't know why anybody. I hope you laughed.
Well, look, something just interesting, I think, to call out with Yard. I mean, he's a guy, you know, I've been critical of his potential, think he's very limited, but he has a lot of physical talent. Another piece where it's kind of interesting with, you know, Top Rank Frank Warren team up, because, you know, now this has put him into the Top Rank sphere, and it makes it more likely, you know, instead of having Frank Warren not having too many fighters, Top Rank not having too many fighters, and, you know, in a handful of divisions where they're very thin, you know, if Bosdick beats Stevenson, you know, that's a potential fight they can build to, Yard versus Bosdick. You know, if, Beterbiev ends up becoming, you know, after the HBO situation is finished, if he ends up fighting on ESPN, that, you know, that again, that becomes part of that ecosystem. So that's really most of what I have to say about that.
Or did you say after James DeGale loses to Chris Eubank Jr. and moves to light heavyweight, they can fight him.
Yeah, I guess so.
By the way, next Saturday is just a packed day of boxing. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards that day. Five cards. All on different networks. you know, we talked about how great it was for all these, you know, all the money to pour into the sport. But truthfully, are we about to be overloaded? Like 5 separate cards going on one day. How are you going to find the time to watch all these fights?
So what are the 5?
So the Anthony Yard card in the afternoon. Then you have the Dazen card, Demetrius
Andrade.
So that's
going to be on, just to go through. So that's going to be on ESPN, or, you know, for U.S. listeners. That will be on ESPN as part of Frank Warren's partnership with Top Rank, right?
I don't think so. And the reason why is because it's not listed on ESPN's schedule.
Okay.
So maybe, but
so I guess
as of
some
now,
Frank Warren
schedule.
Cards are in fact too crappy for ESPN Plus.
Maybe. I don't know. They aired the Jack Catterall O'Hara Davies card, so.
Oh my God.
So Dazen has the Andrade versus Walter Katundanka, whatever card. And then there's the World Boxing Super Series card also on Dazen. Emmanuel Rodriguez versus Jason Maloney. There's the ESPN Plus card, Ryota Murata versus Rob Brent. And then if you're like me, you're interested in the Televisa card that night, which is Francisco Rodriguez Jr. versus Tyson Marquez. If you're not interested in that, that is going to be a bloodbath of a fight.
Yeah, give me the elevator pitch on that. I definitely had no idea. I have no idea who either of those guys is, but I will be more than happy to add it to my DVR.
Francisco Rodriguez Jr. fought Roman Gonzalez 5 years ago. You know how old he is? 25. Right
Jesus.
Now.
Mexico starts him young.
Rodriguez Jr. was the unified minimum weight champion at one point in time. And Tyson Marquez has never been in a bad fight. Most notably, if you want to look up a fight of his, look up his fight with Luis Concepcion. Those dudes just went to war. He even gave Juan Francisco Estrada, who just outclassed him, but he gave him like the best he could give him. He's just a guy, like, these are two Mexican warriors. These guys, they know how to fight a particular way. And when you get them in there with similar thinking guys, they tend to put on a show. So this might end up being a fight of the year contender at the end of the year. Or Francisco Rodriguez Jr. knocks him out in like 2 rounds. That's the pitch. I'm sure, though, most people will wind up watching the Ryota Murata versus Rob Brandt card. Do you want to give me your take on that fight? Interested, because you at one point in time painted Rob Brandt as a guy that Top Rank would avoid matching Ryota Murata with, which I thought was bizarre because Rob Brandt has literally never been in like some category of like good fighters.
Yeah, so I will give my pitch on that. That is definitely the fight I'm most interested in this weekend. I think probably I will, just very quick regarding that giant. I mean, I'm definitely going to avoid the Frank Warren card like the plague. I will watch parts of the Dazen card. Tevin Farmer's on the card, and I'm definitely interested to watch the Andrade main event. I'm not going to try to say the name of his opponent. I definitely can't remember it off the top of my head.
Wow, the slander. The best fight on that card is Katie Taylor versus Cindy Serrano. Don't even try to at me on that one.
I'm going to rant about that for a second. Amanda Serrano is my female pound for pound number one. So Hearn says, oh, I have Katie Taylor versus Serrano. This is a great fight. This is a chance for Katie Taylor to prove herself. Well, it's the wrong Serrano. It's her sister who, you know, no offense to her. I see her. She's at like, both the sisters are at every Barclays show in New York. Like they're, you know, just, they're very visible as twins. Are not twins, but as sisters, they have shared social media account. She's significantly worse, and she's going to get beaten up by Katie Taylor. So it's kind of a shitty way to piggyback off of Amanda Serrano's reputation by beating up her sister. You know, this is stuff we've seen before with the lesser Cotto getting beaten up by all sorts of people. Canelo's brother is getting beaten up by all sorts of people. You know, it happens. We've seen it in boxing. But anyway, getting back to Rob Brandt Murata. Rob Brandt is a guy I really liked coming up. I really viewed him very similarly to Regis Prograis. They're both guys who I saw fight on Showbox. when faced, you know, they were just blowing guys out and had a hard time getting good opponents because they didn't have strong backing. Neither guy got picked up by the PBC in 2015 for whatever reason, when PBC signed like basically the whole sport that wasn't like tied down to someone else. They somehow didn't get picked up. And, you know, that does, you know, raise some red flags. But, you know, Regis Perger is a guy who broke through and has shown himself to be, you know, very good. Brandt got kind of iced out. He fought eliminators to fight for WBA belts, supposed to fight the winner of Murata versus, who did Murata lose to? I wish I had this box right page.
Hassan and Dom.
Yeah, Endem. Supposed to fight the winner. Endem lost or won in a bad decision, universally recognized bad decision. WBA mandates a rematch, but, you know, Brandt gets the winner of that, but that's going to put him on ice for a long time. So he decides to fight in the World Boxing Super Series, moves up to 168. Not a good weight class for him. Fought a fighter coming down from 175 and just kind of got old man. He didn't get beaten up. He didn't get hurt. But he fought just a gigantic relative to himself fight. It looked like a light heavyweight fighting a middleweight. And, you know, even then, he managed to mess up his opponent's face. So, you know, I'm not ready to write him off. I'm curious to see what he'll do at 160. I definitely recognize he's untested, but he's a guy who looked like, think of him as just Perger. He's a guy who looked like he had a lot of potential, but it hadn't been proven yet. Perger, I think, now has been, you know, he's shown that he's for real against some better competition. And I'm definitely interested to see how Brandt will do. And I think Murata, not that good. You know, it did take him two fights with Endem to come out with the win. I don't think Murata is that good. I think Brandt is good enough to get a win. And yeah, I think Top Rank definitely would have preferred to not fight Brandt if they could have fought an easier opponent. You know, they wanted to fight Jason Quigley. They are fighting instead Rob Brandt, who has a chance to win. So yes, I am definitely curious to see how this fight will go. If Murata wins, I think he's definitely the favorite on paper. Looks like Golovkin will fight him. Golovkin said that. But I think Brandt is at least a live dog, and I'm very curious to see if he can pull it off. So I'm curious here, why are you so down on him? Just from that World Boxing Super Series loss, or have you just not been high on him in general?
Never been impressed with him. But here's the thing about this fight. With all my opinion of Rob Brandt, which might be a little exaggerated, I haven't fully ever voiced my opinion on Rob Brandt because I don't really have a strong opinion on him. I don't think he's been exposed to a high level of opposition enough to have strong opinions about him. Essentially, Rob Brandt should be viewed as a prospect. What are you doing?
Oh, sorry. Can you hear that?
Yeah. I don't know what you were doing. But anyway, I don't have a strong opinion of Rob Brandt because he's basically got to this point like a prospect's resume. And, you know, you could do a lot of things with that. You could have very contrasting opinions on what he's done so far. Now, my opinion mostly lies with Ryota Murata. I've been down on Ryota Murata for a long time. I have never been impressed with Murata. I've said for a long time, Murata is slow. And the moment he fights against world-level speed, we will see how good he really is, which is to say, not that good. And how he failed to be totally impressive in that first fight with Ndam says all I need to know about Murata. Now, he's also proven me wrong. I thought that he would have lost the rematch again, and instead he stopped Murata. Ndam. And with Rob Brandt, I could say all the same things I've said in the past about Murata, but I'm not that stupid. I think, while I would not be shocked if Murata lost this fight, there's something about him that's clearly good. And there's something about the matchmaking and the matches that they allow him to be in, I'm saying from Top Rank's perspective, that there is a level of confidence I had that he'll win this fight. And so it's an interesting fight. I will definitely, I'll watch this over the Dazen card. I don't think the Dazen card, and let's jump into that. You may be saying, Well, the Deizen card has three world title fights, including that includes Katie Taylor's fight. Like, are you?
No one is saying that right except Eddie Hearn. Oh,
you know, Demetrius Andrade is a higher pound for pound. If we're ranking fighters on the pound for pound level, he's rated far higher up than Murata is. And Tevin Farmer might be higher as well. Well, here's the thing. I know that the Andrade fight will not be entertaining. And I know as well that the Tevin Farmer fight damn well won't be exciting. So that leads me to believe that the fight that'll be most entertaining to watch live will be the Murata fight. Tevin Farmer versus James Tennyson, it should be a mismatch. And the reason why I say this is because when it comes to British matchmaking and bringing in guys who look good but aren't really good and get beat, who better would know than Eddie Hearn? So I think that this will be a showcase fight for Farmer, given he's one of the guys that Matchroom has signed to be a face of Deizen in America. And the Andrade fight, I mean, both of us, I think, have the same take, which is like, we don't know who Walter is. Andrade, we know who he is. He's pretty good. So he should win this fight, and then he'll get his world title, and who knows what'll happen. Danny Jacobs next, I guess. That's generally my take on these. Anything you want to respond to there?
Yeah, I give it a little bit more credit. I mean, noted that James Tennyson is terrible. He has two losses, both by knockout, and one was against, this is not a mistake, a 2-64 fighter. He got knocked out. So, yes, James
Joshua's
Tennyson.
Joshua's next opponent.
Absolutely the worst opponent they could possibly bring in for Farmer. As far as the Andrade fight, I just don't know anything about Walter Kauton Dokwa.
It's a struggle.
As you said, lots of stuff happening next weekend. I haven't gotten deep enough to try to watch tape on him. I don't know if he has any fights on YouTube, but I like Andrade. Some of his fights are kind of ugly, but I like him. You know, his fight against Willie Nelson was fantastic. You know, I mean, in terms of entertainment value, speaking in terms of showing off his talent. So mixed with the right guy, he can be pretty entertaining. And Walter, I'll just stick with the first name, has a pretty high knockout percentage. If he's aggressive and Andrade, if that ends up being a favorable style matchup for Andrade, that could be an impressive showcase. Or maybe he could end up being a phenom. You know, people always love to bring up Manny Pacquiao coming out of nowhere, you know, to shock the U.S. boxing scene. You know, who knows? He's 17-0, 16 knockouts against Namibian domestic scene level competition. His record is actually pretty hilarious if you look at it. He has a bunch of wins over undefeated Namibian fighters. So, you know, someone was trying to build him up as best they were able to in that system. So, yeah, I'll definitely watch that. I just don't know enough about him to know how entertaining it will be. Regarding, again, the Murata-Brandt fight, I mean, just another comment about that. I mean, it's so interesting looking at Murata's record. I mean, he only has two fights of any significance at all, and that's the two Endam fights. And, you know, it's crazy. Like, Endam was knocked down six times by Peter Quillen and four times by David Lemieux, you know, 10 times total between those two fights. But, you know, fights Endam or fights Murata, and Murata loses an ugly decision to him. You know, it was seen as a robbery, but, you know, it's pretty embarrassing that it got to that point. I mean, it's kind of like when Manny Pacquiao lost to Jeff Horn. Like, Jeff Horn was undefeated, but had not looked good up to that point in his career. It was seen as being very embarrassing that Pacquiao made it close enough that he could lose a decision. You know, and that's, at that point, I kind of wrote off Murata. You know, even if he could win a rematch, which he would be, you know, expected to do since he was seen as winning the first fight, it just kind of seemed to signal, you know, just not that good. But if you just look at the second fight, he dominated the second fight, got a knockout, you know, which, again, getting back to those other fights, they got a lot of knockdowns against Endam, but they couldn't stop him. So it's kind of weird, the story of those two fights. So I am definitely interested to see. I mean, look, if he can beat Brandt's untested enough, you know, it could be an early knockout. You know, Brandt's untested enough, maybe he just doesn't have a very good chin. You know, we don't know that. But at the same time, could be a good fight. I think there's some potential here. You know, Murata was a good amateur. definitely curious about that fight. I mean, look, as far as the Andre versus Walter fight, that's very watchable too. I mean, it's not like I'm not going to tune in. I'm not going to be a snob about that. I mean, you know, we talk about the, you know, at least I talk about the, you know, boxing middle class. When you talk about, you know, this really thinned out version of the sport, you have so many cards on so many different networks. Those are both main events I'm definitely interested in that I'll be look forward to watching.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add there. I think, or well, the World Boxing Super Series card, I think it's really uninteresting. This time around, specifically in the, I'm going to compare it to the Cruiserweight tournament in season one. The first round matchups were pretty interesting because they featured, five through eight featured guys that we knew already. You know, Dmitry Kudryashov, we knew that he just brought like raw power to the table. We knew Marco Huck. We knew these guys, Glavatsky, we knew these guys and what they were capable of, or we, you know, this time around, we don't have that. Junior Dordikos versus Matuz Mastrnak is just like, ugh, Mastrnak. How long has it been since Masternak's been good? We're talking years. He's done nothing of note. Okay, Jason Maloney and Emmanuel Rodriguez on paper should be good, but the reality is Jason Maloney's an Australian fighter who's basically been an Australian fighter, and there's no history that suggests that Australian fighters do well when they come to this, you know, this level of fights, especially when they're making the jump straight to it. So maybe Maloney gets lucky, but Rodriguez looks very good so far in his career. And I think these are both two pretty predictable fights. Unless of course, Junior Dordikos is absolutely washed following his fight with Gassiev.
Yeah, I just... I'll phrase it this way. Like, last year, when Showtime was seen as being possible that they would pick up the first season of the World Boxing Super Series, Steven Espinoza had been at the World Boxing Super Series announcement. Ultimately, they didn't do it. And I actually got to ask Steven Espinoza, you know, why he didn't. This was something that hadn't really been reported on. I got to ask him at a press event. And he said one of the main reasons when he was talking to me about it was the problem of the tournament structure is that sometimes in the early rounds, you end up with these uninteresting fights. It's like by the time you get to the finals, great. But, you know, especially in the first round of the tournament, sometimes it just really hasn't heated up yet, that you're dealing with some of these lower ranked fighters and uninteresting matchups that even if you have, you know, the A side might be like the fourth seed in the tournament. And it really just doesn't bring that much excitement. By the time you get to the finals, great. And the World Boxing Super Series insisted then and now that people needed to buy all of the fights. And he, you know, just said, you know, there's a non-starter for him. Based on that one, you know, again, there were some other factors, but that alone was a non-starter. And I think you're seeing that. I mean, you know, I said the two main events for ESPN Plus and Matchroom USA, I'm looking forward to both of those fights. They're not, you know, blockbuster fights, but I'm definitely looking forward to both of those fights. I am not going to watch this. There's not enough time in my weekend. There are too many cards. I'm definitely just going to check out the highlights and see if Dordico's got a highlight reel knockout.
Fair enough. And that's it for this week. That's it for the fights. That's it for this podcast. Tom, thanks for coming on. I want to thank those of you who listened. If you have not subscribed, you should definitely hit the subscribe button. We do at least one podcast a week, sometimes two. If there's big news, we'll come out with a podcast. If that's not enough for you, if you're like, I need more boxing content, over on patreon.com/SundayPuncher, there's also more podcasts. Long form and short form daily podcasts on the day's news. Lots of boxing content because, you know, Eddie Hearn and Fox and ESPN Showtime can't be the only ones doing all the work here. So, Tom, thanks for coming on. And that's it for this week.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
I'm from the land of the gangbang. Since I was little, ain't a goddamn thing changed. It's the same old saying, Bush run shit like Saddam Hussein. I cock and aim clinically insane to deal with.